the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza enters its 156th day, with a death toll approaching 31,000, most of them women and children. Over 2 dozen Palestinians die of hunger and malnutrition in Gaza as Israel prevents the entry of humanitarian aid and food into the blockaded territory. And Israeli forces use tear gas and water cannon to disperse thousands of protesters demanding the resignation of the regime's prime minister. Thank you for joining us. Now it's over 5 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on Gaza, and the regime's attacks keep claiming lives of innocent Gazans. 10 Palestinians were massacred and several others wounded after Israel bombed a house in Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza Strip. Separately, 2 civilians were killed and dozens were injured, some critically when Israeli forces hit the Al-Shatin refugee camp west of Gaza City. 3 Palestinians were killed and others sustained injuries after another attack on a house in the town of Al-Qarara in the south of the Strip. And 5 others were killed in an Israeli airstrike on Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Earlier, an Israeli strike hit a 12-floor residential tower in the southern city of Rafah, making dozens of families homeless. The Israeli onslaught has so far killed nearly 31,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children. Thousands of others are also missing and are feared to be dead. Starvation in the besieged Gaza Strip continues to take the lives of vulnerable Palestinians. An infant and a young girl are the latest victims as Israel blocks 8 trucks trying to enter the coastal territory. Gaza's health ministry says a 2-month-old girl died in Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza and a 20-year-old girl in Al-Shifa Medical Complex in the same region. This brings the official death toll from malnutrition and dehydration to 25. The ministry estimates that dozens die silently without reaching hospitals. It says the latest deaths prove that the famine in northern Gaza has reached lethal levels. The Gaza Strip, especially the northern region, is grappling with severe shortages in food, water, medication, and fuel. Now let's take a listen to comments by some Palestinian parents and medics explaining how malnutrition is affecting children in Gaza.
There is no proper food for the mothers, especially in the recent period, as we noticed that since December until today, there are no babies with normal weights. Most of them are from 2 kilograms to 2.5. We stopped seeing babies weighing 3 kilograms as in the recent period. The last 4 months since October until today, there is no nutrition for mothers. There is no meat, milk, eggs, fruits or vegetables.
I'm a mom who lost her son due to malnutrition, due to circumstances we're going through in Gaza. What are you expecting from a sick child living in such conditions? How can he get better?
Yazan al-Kafarna, who passed away, was displaced from the north, and he originally had issues with his muscles, but his health was acceptable. He used to receive proper treatment and healthy food, but with the lack of food after the war began, he got worse.
The head of the Hamas Political Bureau has urged the leaders and scholars of the Muslim world to take political, diplomatic and legal measures to halt the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Ismail Haniyeh addressed that pressure must be mounted on countries that support Israel to force the regime to immediately and unconditionally end this onslaught on Gaza. He urged for increased humanitarian assistance to be delivered to Gaza ahead of Ramadan, as people will need more food, medicine and shelter during the holy month. Haniyeh called on Muslim countries to take steps to prosecute Israel, expose the regime's crimes and isolate it politically and diplomatically over its war crimes. He asserted that Israel's crimes won't deter Palestinians from continuing resistance until they regain their freedom and independence in a sovereign state with Al-Quds as its capital. Thousands of Israeli protesters have once again rallied in Tel Aviv demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. At least 10 protesters were detained after clashing with the regime's forces, who used tear gas and water cannon to disperse the demonstrators. Protesters call for an immediate ceasefire in Israel's ongoing onslaught on Gaza and the return of the captives being held by Palestinian resistance groups. They criticized Netanyahu's handling of the war on Gaza and demanded new elections. They also called on US President Joe Biden to stop supporting Netanyahu. Thousands of demonstrators have rallied across the world to show support for the Palestinians and condemn the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protests were held in London, Paris, Seoul, and other cities. Let's take a look.
More than 5 months of major demonstrations, and they're as energized as ever. Hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters from across the UK marching to the American embassy to deliver a message.
Shame on you, Joe Biden, shame on you.
That message is much for the US president as for the UK government.
The majority of people want a ceasefire now, and it's not even a big ask. What are they asking? For humanity and stop killing innocent children and people.
On the stage near the American embassy, Welsh singer Charlotte Church combines Welsh and Arabic words for a song of solidarity, followed by an all-woman cast of speakers marking the International Women's Day and the resilience of Palestinian women. As ever, it's an eclectic mix of groups and organizations, out in great numbers in defiance of attempts by the government to criminalize these overwhelmingly peaceful demonstrations.
We're here to say to the government that we aren't going to be stopped. These aren't hate marches. And we have Jewish blocs, we have Jewish people who march with us in solidarity and who march with us and say not in their name.
The war on Gaza and the UK's support for it has deeply polarized British society. And that's already manifesting itself in the way people are voting. A case in point, the by-elections in Rochdale, Greater Manchester in late February, which handed veteran pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway of the Workers' Party of Britain a landslide victory against the major party candidates.
But we know there's a whole body of people for whom issues of international justice and rights and Britain's position in the world and whether it shows respect for human rights and international law matter. And there are certain constituencies where the issue of does Britain support and protect the rights of the Palestinian people is of particular resonance.
This was the fifth national demonstration of the year, and organizers say there will be more.
While the civilians in Gaza say they feel that their plight is being ignored, the millions of people here and around the world are saying that they are making sure through their protests that the Palestinians know that their cries are being heard. Saipur is up, London.
If there was any concern that pro-Palestinians in France were starting to lose interest in the five-month-long attempted genocide of Gaza by Israel, one of the nation's largest demonstrations since the start of the invasion put that idea to rest. Many thousands converged in the capital for a passionate denunciation of President Emmanuel Macron, the leaders of the Pan-European Project, and all of Israel's war supporters across the West.
If France must stay in Europe, then Europe must respect our demands, and we demand that they stop protecting the terrorist state of Israel. Hamas is not a terrorist group. They are a resistance group, and the United Nations refuse to label them terrorists. Palestinians have the right to resist, to exist, and to be free.
In what many say is an illustration of the West's deadly hypocrisy, at least 5 children were killed by airdropped food aid from Western nations and their allies.
This week, more than 200 members of European Union Parliament called for an arms embargo on Israel. They said that by remaining silent on Gaza, Europe has no credibility to speak on Russia's actions in Ukraine. Germany now provides 28% of Israel's military imports.
Israeli settler attacks in the West Bank have almost tripled since October to 9 per day. Israeli troops continue to open fire on starving Palestinians seeking food aid, and also on United Nations troops in Lebanon. Some 31,000 Gazans have been killed and over 72,000 Gazans wounded, all leaving marchers in disbelief that the West continues to support Israel without conditions or consequences.
It's scandalous. France is charged with defending international law, and it even has a United Nations Council veto to do so, but it only defends Israel instead. I am not asking France to bomb Tel Aviv. I am asking them to uphold humanity's laws with very simple sanctions that could be put in place on Tel Aviv immediately.
Even with the holy month of Ramadan starting next week, Israel has rejected yet another plan for a ceasefire. Many say it's a new low for Tel Aviv.
One must respect the humanity of others, and normally during Ramadan there's a ceasefire to allow people to live their religion in peace. And yet Israel wants to keep murdering babies by starvation during Ramadan? It's scandalous and unacceptable. There must be a ceasefire.
Paris claimed that their forces have destroyed four Yemeni drones in the Gulf of Aden that were heading towards a European Union naval operation, as Israel's invasion edges closer to a larger regional conflict. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Meanwhile, a group of Italian lawmakers who have recently returned from Gaza's Rafah crossing expressed deep concern about the situation in war-torn Gaza. They are saying a genocide is underway amid international silence, and the humanitarian tragedy there grows every passing day. Max Civilli reports from Rome.
A genocide is taking place in Gaza amid international silence. 15 Italian lawmakers who have recently visited the Rafah border in southern Gaza say an international reaction to avoid the aggravation of a humanitarian catastrophe in Rafah is desperately needed. They had left Italy for Egypt earlier this week with a goal to provide the Italian government with a testimony of the tragedy the Palestinians are experiencing as a result of Israel's crimes. Here is what they have to say about their experience.
Israel's cruel actions in Gaza are based on a clear genocidal intent. Refusing to allow water, food, medicine, and humanitarian supplies is equivalent to exterminating an entire population. Palestine must be immediately recognized as a state, and a reconstruction plan is urgently needed.
We saw thousands of trucks waiting at the border with Rafah, as farming is ravaging Gaza. Trucks are not allowed to go through because Israel is stopping them. We are certain that a humanitarian catastrophe is unfolding.
We have met Palestinian kids with their legs amputated in an Italian hospital in Cairo as Israel continues to commit crimes against humanity in Gaza. There is only one person who should be held accountable for the situation there, Netanyahu and his regime.
So far, the Italian government has unrelentingly sided with the Israeli regime. This despite hundreds of pro-Palestine demonstrations having been held across Italy over the past months. Meanwhile, on Saturday, a new demonstration was organized here in Rome by a string of humanitarian organizations, charities, and unions calling for an immediate end to Israel's genocide in Gaza. The initiative is also calling on Italian institutions to protect the right to freedom of assembly and freedom of expression and opinion in Italy.
It is essential to protect and promote dissenting voices. The use of force by our authorities will not stop the course of history. Upholding the rule of law is the only way to ensure peace.
On Saturday, Rome was once again flooded by tens of thousands of people from across the country calling on the international community to hold Israel accountable for its systematic violations under international law and to continue supporting the United Nations agency aiding Palestinian refugees, UNRWA. A demonstration in solidarity with Palestinians was also held in Milan. Max Civilli, Rome.
Meanwhile, pro-Palestinian activists in South Korea have also expressed their anger with Israel as they rallied and marched from the Seoul Central Mosque. South Koreans joined people from various countries around the world to condemn Israel following the massacre of more than 100 Palestinians sought to collect food assistance in Gaza. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
Supporters of Palestine gathered outside South Korea's Seoul Central Mosque to demand a change in policy toward Israel following news of another massacre of innocent civilians in war-torn Gaza.
The unconditional support of Israel should stop, and that we need to start refunding UNRWA and letting aid trucks come into Gaza.
Palestinians are now starving as the U.S. continues sending Israel ammunition, despite the protests of many Americans.
It's really immoral to be sending weapons to a state or country that is killing people in cold blood and is committing a genocide.
Not enough aid is reaching Gaza, with deliveries chaotic and even deadly.
Opening the Rafah crossing and allowing relief supplies into Gaza is simply the bare minimum the Egyptian government can do.
South Korea expressed only deep concern.
Even though information is going all over the world showing that countless women and children are being massacred in the Gaza Strip and Palestine, they remain silent. And we also condemn the silence of these governments.
Many suggest both Israeli and U.S. leaders share responsibility as the bloodshed in Gaza ever mounts. South Korea's alliance with the United States and its reliance on oil states, Saudi Arabia and the UAE, impact Seoul's policies. South Korea and Israel have engaged in millions of dollars of arms trade. Seoul also abstained from a UN vote condemning Israel over its Gaza genocide, seeking some kind of middle ground. This one of dozens of protests here since Israel's genocide began focused on the desperate need to get aid to Palestinians sheltering in Rafah and to open the Egyptian border. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Last but not least, Asif Ali Zardari, a ruling coalition candidate, has been elected as Pakistan's president for the second time. He won the election after defeating Mahmoud Khan Achakzai, a candidate of the party of jailed former Prime Minister Imran Khan. Zardari previously took the presidential office post in 2008 until 2013. With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
As the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. recently made clear in a rare moment of honesty, Washington is fully committed to facilitating the Zionist regime's destruction of the Palestinians. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, on the broader geopolitical front, the continuing expansion of NATO as a means to maintain U.S. hegemony in the face of BRICS and multipolarity championed by the Russian-Chinese alliance has put the U.S. regime into panic mode. The utterly cynical U.S. policy of paying for a proxy war in Ukraine as a means of effecting regime change in Russia has proven to be an utter failure, and seen so by more and more U.S. taxpayers, asked to foot the massive bill, even as allegiance to this same war policy impoverishes Europe as well. In the minds of neocon policymakers and the warmongering Uni-Party alliance in Washington, this failure and the geographic imperative to maintain control of certain shipping routes to assure U.S. dominance has almost made the opening of a new front in the West Asia region inevitable, and it is the expendables, the Palestinians, who are being forced to pay the price. Add to all this the fact that following years of orchestrated cognitive dissonance in the U.S. across a myriad range of issues, from election fraud, COVID treatment, vaccination mandates, the summer of George Floyd, January 6, 2021, the war in Ukraine, the Twitter files, to so many others, an ideal situation for those in power has been created. Those once outraged at being censored or shadow banned for views identified with the right are now all too ready to ban pro-Palestinian speech. And those now harassed, doxxed, or even fired for airing their views can't understand what all the fuss has about when Twitter banned President Donald Trump. This can be seen most clearly in questions centered on free speech and through the media and social media landscape, the very realms through which the atrocities taking place daily in Gaza are filtered or presented. We have moved far from the courageous revelations of Julian Assange, who is now appealing against a court ruling to extradite him to the U.S. While the work of Assange, Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and others involved the exposure of information held in secret from the citizenry, we are now at the stage of unending information saturation in which secrecy no longer seems to matter. With almost everything out in the open and available, the task has become about verifying rather than uncovering reality, and in doing so, narratives are built. Despite various forms of censorship and disinformation in the United States, we have never lived through such a genocidal attack in which so much information is not only readily available but can often be seen in real time. How, then, as both consumers and producers of information as well as political constituents, can we respond to the present situation? From this perspective, it is hard not to see the prolongation of this agony delivered upon a particular people, the Palestinians, and its broadcasting of their most vulnerable moments as some kind of further testing ground of the very category of the human and humans. And it also brings into sharp relief just how limited political powers are, even in ostensibly representative democracies. The significance of South Africa bringing the charge of genocide against the child killer regime of Israel to the International Court of Justice, along with the ICJ's initial findings, cannot be underestimated, but it remains only a tool that we must learn how to use in order to expand the grounds upon which we think and act in the world. As we watch the core institutions in Western societies rot and disintegrate from within due to an inability to name what is happening in Gaza and the world, positions once deemed principled ring more than hollow. As mothers in Gaza can barely give birth or feed their babies, as fathers cannot protect their children, as doctors cannot heal, and as many cannot even retrieve the bodies of their loved ones for burial, we can only conclude that this poisonous cruelty is aimed at the very idea of being a child, a mother, a father, a healer, a mourner. We are up against a regime that has taken direct aim at humanity. With every minute that passes, new lessons in cowardice and cruelty are given by the Israelis and their US and Western enablers. At the same time, we must stand in humble awe of the resistance and humanity shown by the people of Gaza. But in continuing to expose the Zionist regime's genocide against Palestinians, we must ask more of ourselves. We must find ever more useful ways to resist and stay human in pursuit of a just political solution to one of the world's most exposed and festering wounds whose time for healing has long been evident.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and let us listen to a thought-stimulating statement from Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him. The tongue is surely the key to every good and evil. You should seal your tongue as you seal your money. The Prophet had said, "May Allah's mercy be upon the faithful believer who withholds his tongue from uttering any evil, for this would be an act of charity by him for his own self, since no one will be saved from committing sins before he seals his tongue."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, virtues make you happy and corruption makes you sad. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's an honor to be here. Dear friends, we're talking about Islamic lifestyle. Now, One of the things, and what's interesting, is whether it's an Islamic lifestyle or it's not an Islamic lifestyle, one of the fundamental pillars or one of the fundamental foundations and one of the realities of this universe is that moral virtues will make you happy and moral corruption will make you sad. Now, one of the things that we learn throughout all of the religions that have been sent forth, which in reality is one pure message that the Almighty Allah has sent for the guidance and the perfection of humanity, that one message which, because of human beings, has become manifested in different religions, but the final, complete, comprehensive message is Islam. In this message, one of the fundamental things is that moral virtues, righteousness, honor, nobility, all of these things will gain and give you happiness. And on the other hand, moral corruptions, evil, moral vices, all of these things will make you sad. This is something which is set in stone. You can waste your whole life trying to experiment it by going down the path of moral vices to see will it make you sad or not. You can waste your life doing that, or you can just take the word of the Almighty Allah and the messengers and the imams, peace and blessings upon them, who have already told us this. And in reality, if we were to experience this, and we probably have experienced this in our life, we will also get to the conclusion and the end result that truly moral virtues will make you happy and moral vices will make you sad. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how moral virtues will make you happy and how moral vices will make you sad. Now, this is something, as we had left off the last segment, where we said that this is something that we can experience. When we do a good deed, when we help a neighbor, when we help somebody who's being oppressed, when we do good deeds, good actions, when we pray, when we fast, when we go to Hajj, when we go on Ziyarat pilgrimage, right? When we do good deeds and we represent moral virtues, it does make us happy. It brings us a sense of peace, relaxation, happiness, tranquility, serenity. And this is something that everybody, it feels good to do something good. But on the other hand, innately, when it comes to moral vices, they make us sad. And what's really interesting is that even if we ourselves don't involve ourselves in moral vices, even if we look at somebody else or we witness moral vices, even that makes us feel bad and it makes us feel sad and forlorn. And it's a reality, right? Because the essence of vice, the essence of evil, the essence of falsehood is dark and it makes you feel sad. But on the other hand, the essence of good, the essence of truth, the essence of light, it makes you feel good. It has light within it. It brings you out of darkness into guidance. And so most surely a fundamental rule to live by when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle, moral virtues will make us happy and moral vices will make us sad.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
10 minutes.
Less than 2 weeks after launching its genocide on the Gaza Strip, the Israeli military committed one of the most heinous atrocities in modern history. Back on October 18th, a huge blast rocked the Al-Ahli hospital compound in Gaza, which was packed with thousands of Palestinians seeking shelter from the Israeli strikes. According to Palestinian health officials, more than 470 people were killed in that incident. Most of the victims were defenseless civilians who had taken shelter at the hospital and its surrounding areas. At the time, they had no idea that the Israeli regime might target hospitals. Hospitals and clinics have special protections under international law, and the deliberate targeting of these facilities is a clear violation of these principles. As usual, the Israeli army first denied that it was behind the attack. Later, the regime and its Western allies, including the United States and Canada, claimed that the explosion was caused by an errant rocket fired by the armed group Palestinian Islamic Jihad. However, independent investigations by various media sources have debunked this propaganda. The New York Times conducted a thorough analysis of video footage from the night of October 17th, which clearly showed that the missile seen in the video, supposedly fired by Palestinian fighters, did not cause the explosion at the hospital. Instead, it detonated in the sky, approximately 2 miles away. It was, in fact, a missile fired by the Israeli military that caused a devastating explosion.
According to all feeds and videos analyzed, this rocket was intercepted and was the last one launched from Gaza before the bombing of the hospital. 5 seconds after that interception, an explosion in Gaza can be seen, followed 2 seconds later by a much larger explosion. This is the strike that hit Al-Ahli Arab Hospital. As a result, Al Jazeera Digital Investigations team found no grounds to the Israeli army claim that the strike on the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza was caused by a failed rocket launch.
But Al-Ahli Hospital was not the last hospital targeted by the Israeli military during its onslaught in Gaza. According to a report by Human Rights Watch in 2023, the Israeli military has repeatedly and unlawfully attacked medical facilities, personnel, and transport, further destroying Gaza's healthcare system. The report says that these attacks should be investigated as war crimes, as they violated international humanitarian law.
Because every society has the right to have a healthcare system, and that's why the healthcare system is protected by the Geneva Convention. And the fourth Geneva Convention is utterly clear, has always been. And that's why these attacks on healthcare that are so well documented and the most extreme, the most brutal examples are the situations like we have in Nasser Medical Complex now, where they're shooting and killing staff and patients inside. And the situation we had in the West Bank, where they again dressed up like doctors, fake doctors and relatives coming and hid their weapons and went into this room and shot and killed this patient who was actually immobilized, this Palestinian young man, and his two companions. Killed him, executed him and his two companions under the disguise of being medical personnel. The reason why this is so serious and why it is not stopped is so serious is that it threatens the immunity of the healthcare system and the safe network, the safety network that the healthcare system provides to people around the world.
On January 31st, an undercover Israeli death squad posing as Palestinians brazenly infiltrated a hospital in the occupied West Bank, resulting in the assassination of three Palestinians, one of whom was a partially paralyzed patient. Surveillance footage captured the alarming scene as approximately a dozen Israeli special forces raided Ibn Sina Hospital in the northern city of Jenin. Disguised as Palestinian medical personnel and civilian women, they brandished rifles while navigating through the corridors, perpetrating this shocking act in broad daylight. According to the World Health Organization, Israel has conducted nearly 400 attacks on healthcare facilities in the Gaza Strip, including on every single one of its hospitals, leaving the majority non-functional as of February 12. This illustration, published by the WHO, details the Israeli strikes on healthcare facilities in the Gaza Strip. According to the report by the World Health Organization, at least 659 people have lost their lives and more than 840 others injured in Israeli attacks as of February 12. Nearly 100 ambulances have been targeted, with more than 50 destroyed by the Israeli missiles. As of February 12, only 11 out of 36 hospitals in Gaza are partially functioning, 5 in the north and 6 in the south. According to the World Health Organization, hospital bed capacity across all of Gaza has now been reduced from 3,500 to just 1,400. But this is just the tip of the iceberg, and the disaster seems to be much worse. Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, is one of the international organizations actively working in Gaza despite Israeli attacks. Doctors Without Borders has already lost several staff members in recent months as a result of Israeli attacks. In the most recent attack, the Israeli military deliberately targeted an MSF shelter in Gaza, killing two people and wounding several others. As an international charity organization, MSF is committed to independence, neutrality, and impartiality, as it only seeks to provide medical services to vulnerable people across the world, especially those trapped in conflicts and war zones. According to MSF, the Israeli military systematically targets health facilities in Gaza. Médecins Sans Frontières deplores a situation in which people have been left with no options to go for treatment in case of a large influx of war-wounded patients. These systematic attacks against healthcare are unacceptable and must end now so that the wounded can get the care they need. The entire health system has been rendered inoperative. As a matter of fact, the targeting of hospitals in Gaza by the Israeli military has tragically become an everyday occurrence. Just recently, a harrowing voice message was sent by a Palestinian capturing the horrifying sounds of Israeli bombing echoing from Nasser Hospital in Rafah.
About what's happening here in Nasser Hospital, there was direct bombing to the hospital. They forced people inside the hospital, including patients, relatives. Oh, ya Allah. Patients, relatives, and healthcare workers to evacuate immediately. And you can hear in the background the continuous bombing in the hospital.
This blatant act of aggression saw Israeli soldiers storming the hospital in broad daylight, a clear violation of international laws governing the protection of medical facilities and personnel during armed conflict.
Israeli soldiers and tanks continue to shoot and bomb in the nearby area, inside and outside the hospital. We hear the tanks moving inside the hospital. We cannot look through the window.
The extent of attacks by the Israeli military leaves no doubt that the regime is deliberately and systematically targeting the medical centers in Gaza. Israel is now directly targeting medical staff in Gaza. But why is Israel destroying hospitals and deliberately targeting doctors and medical staff in Gaza?
Is that not only is Israel systematically targeting medical facilities, but they are targeting medical professionals. And Israel's objective in targeting medical professionals is to cripple the health sector by killing an entire generation of doctors, to the extent that building the hospitals after the genocide would not even suffice to restore the health sector. I mean, it's such an unspeakable thing, but this is all part of Israel's goal to make Gaza completely uninhabitable and compelling Palestinians to leave the Gaza Strip, which is one of Israel's ultimate war goals.
Such brazen attacks come amid the unequivocal support from Israel's staunch allies, including the United States and its European supporters, who have not only remained silent, but also supplied Israel with deadly weapons and ammunition to continue its genocide in Gaza.
My point is that it's horrible, and the most horrible thing about what is going on in Nasser Hospital now is that this has been going on for 4 months without no power stopping it. So I don't know. I think the Israelis, with their impunity, they just keep going because no military force or political force or international alliance of decent nations are able to stop them. The only one who can stop them is the United States, and they don't want to stop them. They continue to supply them with political support and weapons. So this madness is a result of a deliberate politics, a deliberate policy from the United States, and unfortunately also from many of the European governments.
The United Nations has repeatedly condemned Israel's attacks on civilian targets, including hospitals in Gaza. In 2023, the UN Human Rights Council adopted a resolution that condemned Israel's attacks on hospitals and called for an independent investigation into the attacks. However, the resolution has not been implemented, as Israel enjoys impunity thanks to the unwavering support from its staunch ally, the United States, and other Western countries. The recent U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza has once again underscored the hypocrisy of those who claim to champion human rights and has highlighted the inefficacy of international organizations in addressing Israel's occupation regime. It has become evident that only through alliances among independent nations can we hope to halt such atrocities.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Recently, starving Palestinians were queuing for long-awaited deliveries of food in Gaza City's Al-Rashid Street when the Zionist regime forces opened fire on them. According to Gaza health officials, a minimum of 112 people were killed and 280 injured, the majority of whom appear to have been shot. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Aref Abed had heard that Samaid was to be delivered. Together with his brother Atef and a few friends, he went to Al-Rashid Street, southwest of Gaza City. They spent the night outdoors, catching a few hours sleep. Early in the morning, they heard people shout happily that trucks carrying food had finally arrived. Many international organizations had stopped delivering aid to the northern half of Gaza a few months ago. It was unsafe for them to operate there. With food extremely scarce, people in the north are starving. Aref and his friends rushed toward the trucks when they stopped. Before they had reached them, they saw Israeli regime troops opening fire from tanks on hundreds of people. Many were shot as they climbed onto a truck seeking a packet of flour. Others were hit as they carried their packets toward their families. Aref said one of the tanks moved ahead and drove on the bodies that were on the ground. We heard the cries of many people before they were killed by tanks running over them. Soon the flour and packaging was covered in blood. The violence was merciless. According to Aref, some people who survived being run over started begging for help. Aref ran away from the trucks. At the same time, the Zionist regime attacked the crowd from the air. After the bombardment stopped, Aref and his relatives hurried to transport the injured to nearby hospitals. Hundreds of people were left bleeding to death as ambulances could not reach the scene for some time. Some people attempted to bring the wounded to the hospital using donkey carts. When they went to one of the hospitals, Aref asked his brother Atef to go and fetch food for one of the patients. Atef managed to find some canned food and some flour and baked some bread. He felt that baking it was a small triumph as the patient had not eaten bread made with flour for a month. As flour is unavailable in markets, she had been eating bread made with animal feed. Even that had become impossible as animal feed had run out. The patient had kidney failure and should be undergoing dialysis 3 times per week. Because of electricity cuts, she has only been having dialysis once a week lately in Ashifa, Gaza's largest hospital. Atef said she was starving to death. She cried with happiness that she could finally taste bread. Aref and Atef witnessed what has become known as the Flour Bag Massacre. At least 112 people were killed in the attack. It was among the bloodiest incidents since the Zionist regime declared its current genocidal war on Gaza. Anas Sopi had come to Al-Rashid Street about an hour before the 8 trucks arrived. He was seeking food for 10 members of his extended family. They included his parents and his 6 children. Once the trucks were spotted coming from the south, many people applauded. Anas hoped that he would get some aid. Over the previous week, his wife had to cook grass with dough made from animal feed on a wood fire. They told their children that the grass was khubza, a leafy plant used in a number of traditional Palestinian dishes. At other times, the family have not been able to find ingredients for dough. The only food items they had were salt and lemons that had begun to rot. Like many others, Anas and his friend Roddy hurried towards the aid trucks as soon as they arrived on Al-Rashid Street. As soon as he got close to the first truck, which was carrying flour, the Zionist regime troops in tanks began firing towards the crowd. A quadcopter also began attacking them from above. Anas was so desperate for food that he and a friend kept moving toward the aid trucks, where they succeeded in getting hold of some packets. Soon afterwards, his friend Roddy was shelled in the back and fell to the ground. Anas saw one of his neighbors, the neighbor and his three sons, lifted Anas and the wounded Roddy onto a cart. With the help of his neighbor, Anas made it back to his family, but Roddy died. Anas said he was killed while trying to get some food. He was trying to keep his starving family alive. Muhammad Balusha had promised his mother that he would come back with a bag of flour. They had discussed how the flour would then be used to make Muhammad's favorite breakfast, Manakish Adal topped with the herb za'atar. Muhammad liked to eat it with cheese. And so Muhammad went to fetch aid with a group of others from Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. He was so determined to get some provisions that he kept advancing toward the aid trucks on Al-Rashid Street when the Zionist regime troops had opened fire. He managed to obtain some flour, yet was struck with a bullet in his head soon afterwards. His friend Ahmad drove him to Kamal Adwan Hospital in the northern city of Beit Lahia. An emergency operation proved unsuccessful. Muhammad died the next day. Ahmad had to break the terrible news to Muhammad's mother. Apart from salt, Muhammad had not eaten anything for several days before he was shot. Ahmad said, "My friend Muhammad was hungry when he was killed. There is no form of murder worse than what happened to him."
To avert famine, there must be road access to Gaza's north. Words from the World Food Program. After apartheid Israel turns back a convoy trying to get food into Gaza. Hello everyone and welcome back to Gaza Under Attack. I'm Saeed Bourza. U.S.-Israeli bombs continue to rain down on Palestinians in Gaza as talks for a ceasefire grind on in Cairo, Egypt. Hamas has presented its proposal for a ceasefire agreement to mediators. The Israeli regime has not sent any negotiators to the talks. What will their response be? Lebanon's Hezbollah has launched heavy rocket barrages at an Israeli kibbutzim in the north of the 1948 occupied territories in response to an air raid that killed three civilians in southern Lebanon. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, have called for an immediate and durable humanitarian ceasefire in the besieged territory as the holy month of Ramadan approaches. And apartheid Israel's war cabinet minister Benny Gantz in London after spending 2 days meeting power brokers in Washington. Is this the beginning of the end for Benjamin Netanyahu? In only 5 months, the U.S. Europe-backed Israeli genocidal campaign in Gaza has killed more than 30,000 Palestinians and wounded over 72,000 others. With us on this edition of the program, British-Palestinian student and activist Tariq Othman, and Rick Sterling, a veteran journalist working with the L.A. Progressive, Anti-War, and Al Mayadeen, to name just a few. Rick joins us via Skype from the Bay Area in California, USA. Thank you both for being here. I'll start with you, Rick. Biden gave the impression a ceasefire was as good as done and dusted. Yet here we are. What do you think are the stumbling blocks to a cessation of violence at the moment?
Well, the main stumbling block is the United States' refusal to demand that Israel stop its genocide. There have been three United Nations Security Council resolutions that the United States alone has vetoed. The latest manipulation and trick is for the U.S. to say that Hamas is responsible, but in truth, it's the U.S. and the Israeli government.
What do you make of the U.S. government's claim of putting pressure on Israel?